Mwamba Bennett. Hello, I'm Malcolm Cox, and welcome to the Sunday Sample episode 54 for Corporate Worship Matters. And today I bring you an interview, with Mwamba Bennett of the Birmingham Church of Christ, who's part of the worship team up there. And we had a wonderful conversation today when I asked her some questions, and she gave me some thoughts about the strengths of the Birmingham worship team, her own convictions, and a few other things, which I think you'll find fascinating, inspiring, and helpful. So I'll give you the interview now, and I would love to know later what you think about the things that she shared.
Pat, but the first place to start really is if you could tell me and everybody else that will be watching or listening to this a bit about yourself. How long have you been a Christian? How did you end up leading worship? I mean, how did that all happen? I mean, just give us a thumbnail sketch of where you've come from till now.
Okay, so I have been a disciple for 22 years. I was met as a student in Birmingham. My family moved to England 26 years ago. And I come from a very musical background. My mom used to sing in the choir. My grandfather used to compose music. So I grew up listening to that. So as a disciple, although in the early years, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to sing up at the front because I was kind of done being the performance person, I would say, of the family. Oh, no, she can sing. You know, and I was always kind of, it was always something I was pushed to do, even though I liked it. I didn't like the performance aspect of it a lot. So, however, as God will have it, a sister sat next to me in the service and said, "Why are you sat here? You should be." And I was like, "Oh, no. I don't really want to be leading. I just like to be in the crowd." So, yes, but eventually I did kind of surrender and join the team. And then, you know, now I co-lead the corporate worship team in Birmingham with two other brothers. Yeah, so that's, you know, Martin and Hugh lead with me. So we've been doing that for a little bit. So that's kind of how I've ended up here.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great. You couldn't keep that under a bushel for too long.
No, I really did try. I'm quite happy to do it from the pews, not at the front. So it's a very comfortable position to be in. But okay. can't hide.
No. Yeah. No. Well, I'm very grateful that someone sat next to you and noticed, hey?
Yes. I should have been singing inside, not the voice coming out, which is not easy to do. So, yeah.
Well, let's move on to Birmingham specifically as a worship team, if you like, just for the sake of, you know, for people in other cities and other places that don't know the worship team there and so on. So I'd be curious as to what perhaps you think is a strength of the team in Birmingham when you rehearse, when you are leading corporate worship, when you think about the resources God has given you, the gifts God has given you, whether they are, you know, specifically musical or spiritual in some connected way. I don't know, would you say that God has given you particular strengths in Birmingham?
So I think in Birmingham we have strength in terms of the diversity of the people in our worship team. So we have, there are about 20 people in our team. They're not all full-time, but they are members of the worship team. Not full-time because of their jobs. So we have performers in the group. We've got students, you know, people like me who are, you know, professionals, etc. And they all bring different strengths. So I can sing, I can't play an instrument, and I wouldn't even begin to understand what that is. But there are people who, like Hugh, for example, he can sing as well as play an instrument. And so we draw on each other's strengths for that. So I think that breadth of experience as well. So we've got mature Christians as well as very new Christians, and bringing and giving everyone that voice. And helping them to see that this is a very much a team that we have in Birmingham. So I would say our strength is in those numbers, as well as we have a common basis. This is not to entertain. We are here to worship God. So we all strive to understand that. And enjoy it along the way. So we had a rehearsal yesterday. We have a fundraising event tomorrow where some of our team, not everyone, will be singing. But we opened it up to everyone and just said, whether you're able to come or not, just come and fellowship with us and we'll sing and worship God together. So I think, you know, that enjoying being with your brothers and sisters in the faith really does come across. And we do use that really, really well. It's not a chore when you enjoy what you're doing, because we all understand it's not about one individual. It's about how we come together to give glory to God.
That's really interesting. And so your group of 20, that's a church of about how many? You've got 100.
So we have a church of about, I'd say, just over 100 people.
Just over 100. So that's getting on for 20% of your membership is in the worship team. That sounds quite high to me.
Yes.
Do you think so?
So I think, you know, it's at the moment we've got about 130, I'd say, in our congregation. So, and I was looking at the list of people that I would write to regularly. So about 20 of them. But on a given Sunday, we probably have about half of that number regularly. So we do take it in turns as well. So you can't have all 20 of us at the front. So we tend to, you know, take it in turns to do that. So.
And do you think, so what proportion of significance would you place on 20 people with the gifts and talents to help lead worship, as opposed to perhaps a sense of willingness and eagerness? Or is it, do you think, to do with the fact God's given you more gifts than the average church or size? Or is it more about the atmosphere? Is it more about the way that worship is pitched, if you like, the way that people think about worship, the way people think about leading it? Is it to do with the atmosphere of the team? Do you know what I mean? What do you think about?
I think we have definitely a willingness. I would say that is definitely there. So we, you know, there are a lot of us who are not necessarily, you know, skilled singers. There are some that are, but the willingness to learn from and work with other people definitely comes across. So I think, you know, and that's across the whole church. It isn't just unique to us. And I think we work very much that, you know, just because you're at the you're not at the front on a Sunday doesn't mean you're not leading worship. Right. You can do it from where you're sat. You know, your attitude will inspire the people around you. And that's when you're in the service itself. If you're serving, looking after and teaching the children, that is equally, you know, a place where you can lead worship, because those children know, they'll see you at the front on Sunday, suddenly you're in the class and they're thinking, okay. You know, sometimes it can feel like, you know, those people at the front wouldn't be in you know, teaching the kids. And I love doing that, because it's a different way to engage with, you know, the children. So I think, you know, being conscious of the fact that you can lead and inspire people to worship in whatever that capacity is. And we've done things like visiting people who aren't able to come to the service. So we have a brother who's in a nursing home. So we've gone to his nursing home to encourage him. And especially at Christmas, we'll go and sing carols, and the staff will ask that, can you come to reception, and we'll play you singing across the whole home. So it's kind of, you know, fed through that. And that's really encouraging to us, because it isn't just about on a Sunday. You can take that Sunday worship, if you like, to where a person's at. So it is having that heart to want to be willing to serve as well as learn, and serve in whatever capacity you're called on.
Yeah, that's a great point you make about, you can lead worship even if you're not standing in front of people.
Yeah.
You're part of the creation of an atmosphere and a culture of worshiping together. Mm-hmm. Yes, we all influence each other.
Yeah, we absolutely do. And I think it's very important, because I think a lot of the time when I'm not singing at the front, sometimes people will say to me, how come you're not at the front? And I'll say, well, it's someone else's turn. And it's healthy that people don't associate me constantly with being at the front on a Sunday, not just for them, but for me as well, because I do recognize that there are times when I start to get weary and struggle in my faith. And I think that's because it stopped becoming something I'm doing because I love it. Mm. And it becomes a tick box. Okay, I go to church, I sang, I led, rather than, you know, if I, you know, take that time out to just reflect on, why am I doing this? Who am I doing this for? Not just what do I get out of it, but what do I give? It helps me to stay focused on worshiping God, not worshiping the duty of leading worship. So it is healthy for me to step back as well as, you know, step up. It is healthy. Yeah.
That's great. That's a great point. Mm-hmm. So another thought I had was just what you think is working. What's working well in your experience there with the worship team in Birmingham, as you look at the situation now, maybe the way it's developed over the last few years?
Yeah.
And, you know, what's kind of, you've got a strength of diversity. That's one thing you have as a strength.
Yeah.
What are you trying? Yeah. What's your current emphasis, if you like, in terms of the corporate worship and that's working that you feel encouraged about?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the team itself wasn't always in place. So we went from, you know, having, you know, one or two people leading on a Sunday to now having, you know, a team of people who you can call upon. And that you know, has been a challenging process to get to. The church itself has gone through different transitions. So I think this year has definitely been about us being flexible because the service format has changed. So we, you know, the children go to class initially. So we have a worship song, then we do kind of the sermon communion bit at the front end, and then the sort of worship for, you know, end of the service. Well, it happens at the end of the service. So when the children come back in, that's when we have more songs, you know, whereas when I first came along, all that happened at the beginning. So, and in the middle, we have a mixture of songs, you know, talks and silence. And I would say that is for me, one of the most challenging changes, because I went from, I love to sing, I will sing, we can do away with the message, let's just sing, you know, for the next 2 hours, which may not be encouraging to everybody. And we do need to focus on God's word. So that is a very key message. So when the idea of not having any songs after communion to give time to reflect was first, I was like, this is just not working. So, but we have worked with the leadership team of the church to adapt to all of the changes. And it took a little while to get that format sorted. But it was always done in, you know, with the attitude of, okay, we need to continue to work to support the congregation to worship God. So whatever that change is, our priority is we need to help people focus on God, not just, you know, the change and you know, ourselves as well, because that is always a challenge. I don't think you can lead people where you haven't gone. So for me, silence was a struggle, and I had to really reflect on why that is. I don't like silence. I don't like necessarily being still. I want to be busy all the time. But I've realized that actually there is great value in stillness before God. It's not a place of, you know, silence doesn't mean fear or that something bad is about to happen, because it's not the calm before the storm. You know, it allows your mind to just process those things you've been trying to drown out with being busy or singing or whatever.
Yes.
And if they're too, and invariably they will be more overwhelming than I can handle. I can pray about them and leave them in God's presence. So I think, you know, and working together on those things that challenge us as a team, we will have workshops to talk about things like that. So, and we had one jointly with the church in Manchester and Leicester a year ago. We tried to do that again, but, you know, this year it hasn't been possible. We definitely plan on doing that as well. So I think for us, it's you know, that flexibility and keeping your heart humble and saying, no matter what the change, God will help us through this, and making sure we do that as a team. our biggest sort of, you know, thing that we work on a lot is communication. Communicating often, clearly, is key, because it's really easy, even in a group of people, you'll say something once and everyone comes away with 20 different versions of what you've just said. So, you know, we have a WhatsApp group where we'll post messages, we'll email people, we'll call, text, just to make sure that we are all on the same page. So those are some of the things that we're working on, or, you know, I've worked. So, yeah.
That sounds really good. Sounds really good. And we do get quite precious about the way we do things.
Yes. Yeah.
And even though, and this occurs to me, it happens with me, even though I know intellectually that the way we do things is just our choice, and almost nothing we do in the way that we do it is defensible biblically, as in it must be done only this way. Yeah. Even though I know that, and I even would say that to people and urge people not to be too locked into things. When it comes to changing something I like, oh my goodness, struggle in my heart.
I'm so much better now.
Oh,
yeah.
I hate the feeling of change.
Yeah.
And it is a challenge. It is a challenge to our humility and our communication. And perhaps those are the two key things here. You've mentioned them. Yeah. I think they are the two keys. Good communication and humility, because humility isn't necessarily doing something because someone tells you that's the way it needs to be done.
Yeah.
It can be obviously quite an engaged process of discussion, but it's going in with an openness of mind, an openness of heart to, hey, there may be a better way to serve the congregation with worship at this time. Maybe the way we were doing it served for a time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's change is disturbing.
Yes, yeah. So it has been an interesting process of how do we do this? And I didn't want to fake obey. So
yes, of course. Yes.
Just do it and I'll just nod, smile and go home and seize all the way home. So I don't think that's not the right way to do it. But I had an honest conversation with myself, and I did, you know, share it with our evangelist when he said it. I was like, okay, this is going to be a challenge for me, but you know, we'll work with it. And I think humility comes a lot when there are changes on the day, because there are times, even, you know, we've set up some songs. I remember there was a sermon that was preached that actually Forrest, who's the evangelist, was preaching, and he sang a line from one of the songs. It wasn't on the schedule, and I clocked two of the brothers going, I think we should sing that song. I was like, what? Oh, okay. So I was thinking, okay, we need to find the lyrics, and it was literally, and I thought I could have argued the point that we've already got a plan, thank you. The slides are not going to be ready, or do you know what? It's fine. We'll just go with it. What was really nice is that we got Forrest to sing, to lead that song. He wasn't prepared for that time. So, you know, on the spot change. That's, you know, it might be unsettling, but I'm yet to see it not work, because I do think God has a bigger plan than our little one. And he will order things the way that he wants. So that's always good.
That's a great point. Yeah. I mean, that is one of our challenges, is to stay open to the, what you might call, the promptings of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Because it's good to have a plan. It's not good to be disorganized. But on the other hand, we can't get locked into something just because it pleased us and it seemed like a good idea at the time. Yeah. Now, can I ask you just, and then personally, we talked about the team a bit and the things that are working well and things like that. Yeah. For yourself, when you think about leading corporate worship, being part of that team, helping a group of people, a congregation, to engage in worship as best you can, effectively you can, as healthily you can, are there any one or two particular convictions that drive you in your desire to serve in this way? Is there something that you believe about worship in this sense? Worship covers lots of things, but in terms of this corporate worship setting, when we're together and worshiping, are there some things that are particularly important to you?
I think what's particularly important is that it's not a performance. It is our service to God. And I say that because I used to perform, and until I did that, I hadn't really noticed that there can be some performance elements to my, you know, worship. So the desire to make sure that every note is perfect, every word is said exactly. And I think you get locked into arguments over which note is, and I think, well, what is this about? I'm not saying that we shouldn't give our best, but best doesn't always have to sound pitch perfect. You can have somebody lead a song, they're not necessarily the most gifted singer, but they absolutely have the heart to serve. And that comes across. So I think that for me is very key. And I always have to keep asking myself, am I being, you know, submissive to God in this element of my worship in my life, and how we are helping each other and leading the congregation to worship God in that. And I think I was reflecting on this morning, and, you know, so I was looking up a scripture, and I will read it because I won't say from my memory. So John 4:24 talks about God is spirit, and his worshippers must worship in spirit and truth. And for me, it's making sure that when we do get together, it is about making sure that we rely on God's spirit for direction, for strength, and not our own, because it's very easy to rely on your talent. So I can sing, I've done this before, so I don't really need to look at the songs, let's just go. But actually, we do need to practice, we do need to think about the words, what they mean. So I think going back to research the history of the song, why it was written, what are the words and what do they mean for us today, is healthy, and does it, how does that work with our faith? And the truth element in terms of, it's God's truth, not ours. But also there's an element for me about coming to do the corporate worship in the truth of, you know, if I've had a bad week, you know what I mean? I'm coming to God from a place of, okay, I'm going to need your strength to do this and your spirit. The truth is right now I feel less than, but with God I can do this, and I can come to him. He won't reject me. He'll accept my, you know, less than worship, and, you know, lift me up when I don't feel that strong. So that, and I think that's really important, because coming, you know, I love music, and I've been to worship concerts where that atmosphere is created, where everybody feels good, and it is more than just a feeling. Does it cause the congregation to reflect on God? Am I reflecting on God, or am I focused on the style of the song and the beat and the notes, etc.? So it's a, it can be a tension if I let it, or actually an opportunity for God to work. So I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
No, it does, and thank you for that. I think that all of us, most of us, I think, who love the music, as is right, God gave us music, but most of us who love the music can get too much in love with the music being done a certain way.
Yeah.
And it's, we've got to remember that the heart connection with God is much more important. As I share with worship teams regularly, and I try to remind myself, a worship leader's priority is not to be a good musician. A worship leader's priority is to be a good communicator. And music is part of the medium with which we're communicating and connecting one another with God.
Yeah,
but it is a medium. It's not the it's not the goal. The music is only a wonderful, blessed tool, a unique tool. But it's a tool, not an end in itself.
So I do, you know, find myself thinking, well, that note wasn't quite right, or that, and I have to stop myself from thinking, okay, this is not a performance. When we get to heaven, it will all sound perfect. And that's okay. So it's much less stressful when I just say, you know, let it go, and you know, God will work it anyway. So some of the best things we've ever done have been when we're all sick, struggling with one virus or another, and you think, I have barely got a voice, but somehow we managed to do it after we've prayed, and then, you know, see what God does. And I love those moments, because it isn't about us and how perfect we are, because we're not, because we're all ill. So how can you do that? And it is really good.
There's something about that that means we know we can't do this without God. Yeah. So the presence of God is more real to us, even though he's no more present then than he ever is. Yeah. But somehow in our weakness, he becomes more tangibly, noticeably present to us. And somehow I think that then makes a big difference to the quality of what we offer him.
Yeah.
And how we help other people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Is there anything else? Anything else you feel God's been teaching you or your worship team, or just anything else you'd particularly like to share, or something that occurred to you while we were talking that you thought, I must mention that? Anything like that?
I think, I suppose that the communication and humility aspects were key, and making sure that as we lead worship, it isn't just about the congregation out there, that we do this together, that, you know, it is, you know, we are working together, not just as, you know, and not just as a mass, but as individuals. So for me, is that self-reflection, you know, a lot, and not all, you know, that we do that for 90% of the time, but that we do have a sense check of where everybody's at, so you know how everyone's doing, how I'm doing, and that we help each other, because it isn't just about what we do on Sunday, it's that, you know, Sunday to in the week well. So, you know, I think some of the ways that I've been able to overcome any frustrations with change, etc., have been because I've taken that time out to think, why is this uncomfortable, why do I feel this way, and explore that a little bit. And certainly your devotionals have helped. So the one on centering silence was really, I honestly, if there was a way to say this is absolutely the hand of God, that was it. Because that morning I really did struggle. And when the video popped up, I thought, hang on, what? And listen to it. I thought, this is really weird. Okay. But it just, it helped really focus. And I think using, you know, the resources that are out there like yours, and we use some of the life-changing worship, but I also learn from other congregations who may do things slightly differently to us and say, well, what can we learn from them in how they do it? So you know, whether that's, you know, reading the words of a song, etc. But I think that willingness to learn from other people is also really key, because we don't always have the answers, and sometimes the answer can come from a very unexpected place. I think one thing is also asking the congregation for feedback. So I'll ask, you know, the teens, the students, the children, you know, what do they like, don't like, what do they, you know, what can we do better, differently, and then take it on board, because that can also be, how do you incorporate all these different things, but we, you know, we try and do that as well, but do it together, not just, you know, alone, because if it was left to me, we'd be singing the same type of music and everybody will be bored, including me. So, you know, but that does help, and letting some of the newer people lead songs in a less intimidating setting, whether that's, you know, on a midweek service, or, you know, during the rehearsal, to let them gain that confidence is always really helpful again. So yeah, I guess that was it.
Well, that's really helpful, Moamba. I mean, there is there's gold in there, so thank you.
Yes, please. Yeah, you'll have to condense that down.
I'll do my best. Yeah. yes Really grateful for you just taking the time out of your holiday.
Yeah,
your precious holiday.
Yeah, I'm going to go and enjoy the rest of it.
Oh, please do enjoy it, and get some more refreshment, whatever you need.
Yes, absolutely. All right.
Thank you. Right. Well, I'll be in touch. Let's keep sharing ideas. When if you get, you know, if you guys in Birmingham come up with some new ideas, any thoughts you've got that help, then do post it. Let us all know, and we'll keep learning together.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And thanks a lot, and God bless you.
Bless you too. Thank you.
All right. Bye for now.
Well, thank you so much, Moamba, for sparing the time from your holiday to give us those thoughts. Very much, very grateful. Thank you. Let's pray for our friends in Birmingham and the church there and the worship team there. And I'd love to know what your thoughts are from the things that she shared. What struck you? What was inspiring? What was helpful? What raised more questions for you about leading corporate worship? Please leave a comment wherever you hear or see this recording, as we learn best when we learn in community. If you think of somebody who might benefit, then please pass the link on. Hit that like button, subscribe, leave us a review in iTunes. And I pray the next time you gather with all your friends, all the saints, to worship our great God, that it will be a time of joyful, sustained, excited worship of our great God. Take care and God bless.